My name is Paul Weber, and it is my pleasure to host this third teleclass in a four-part teleclass series on antibiotic resistance. This teleclass will look specifically at MRSA management and the Holland experience. As with most of our teleclass topics, registrations for this one have come in from healthcare professionals on four different continents. Thank you all for joining us today, and for those of us who are listening to recording, welcome to you as well. And a special welcome to you if this is your first teleclass with us. This is, in fact, the first teleclass that we have featured faculty from the Netherlands. And before I launch into my introduction of our faculty, I would like to point out that the six slides to a page handout that you might be looking at now is missing two images that I just couldn't get converted to that format. They are at the bottom of page one and at the top of page two. Those images do appear in the PowerPoint version, though, so if you're looking at that, you're just fine. Today, I am pleased to introduce Gertie van Knippenberg-Gordebeek. Forgive me, Gertie, of Vicurie Medical Center in Holland. Gertie is on the board of the International Federation of Infection Control. She is the editor of that organization's newsletter, and she is just back from an infection control conference in Singapore. Gertie is a very nice person, a great friend, and a whole lot of fun to spend time with. So to present MRSA situations in Holland, I am delighted to present my good friend, Gertie.
Thanks, Paul. That was very nice, all these nice words about me. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, dear colleagues, all over the world, wherever and whenever you listen. It's an honor for me to give this teleclass lecture, and it is a great pleasure for me as an infection control nurse to tell you about the MRSA battle in the Netherlands. More as 25 years I'm working as an infection control practitioner in Vicurie Medical Center in Venlo, that is the southern part of Holland. After all these years, MRSA remains a challenge for me and also from my colleagues and from my doctors. As a board member at the International Federation of Infection Control, shortly said IFIC, it gives me also the opportunity to share the Dutch ideas worldwide. The title I was given for this lecture, Low Endemic MRSA Situation, What is Behind the Success in Holland? I would have preferred to be able to say that this success was because of me. But that, of course, is not true. And by the way, that nice little lady you see in the first slide, that's not me, that's a typical Dutch girl. The low endemic MRSA is because of an excellent healthcare infrastructure in Holland. Next slide, please. The success story starts in history. I have to mention 10 highlights because if this has not happened in the past, we would not be so far as we are now in 2004. The basics of microbiology and hence infection control was made possible because of the invention of the microscope by Anthony van Leeuwenhoek, a Dutch salesman. The government has played a role in monitoring the health of the population for hundreds of years already. From 1798, healthcare was supervised at national level. After the Napoleonic incorporation of the country into France, local and provincial committees for medical inspection and supervision were set up through the country. One of the tasks of these committees was to inform everybody of outbreaks and contagious diseases. The aim was, and the aim is, improve healthcare and protect the patient. The State Inspectorate of Health now is an autonomous part of the Ministry of Health, Welfare and sports. To improve healthcare, there are three forms of supervision. General supervision, what looks at the guarantees for high standards of care. Crisis or intervention supervision, what takes place in the event of serious problems. And what they do regularly, thematic supervision, to obtain a picture of the effects of governmental policy at the national level, or sometimes to look at the specific bottlenecks in the care. Since 1903, we have had a nationwide tuberculosis control program. The current infection control teams learned a lot from the way it was done by them, search and destroy. Since the introduction of antimicrobial therapy, it has been used carefully in community and healthcare settings. As a patient, you can only get antibiotics in Holland by medical prescription. In the late 50s, we had serious outbreaks with Staph aureus. And then there was the first national symposium on infection control. From this symposium, it took 7 years to develop national infection control guidelines. For more than 13 years, Dutch hospitals have run active infection control programs led by infection control practitioners, both nurses and lab technicians, and medical microbiologists, the physician. There was a need for the first infection control nurses to form a group to discuss and share problems and share solutions. In 1973, the Dutch Association for Infection Control Practitioners was founded, and now every hospital has at least one infection control nurse and some more, up to even four. Another milestone, the WIP, the National Working Party of Infection Control, was established by four societies actively engaged in the field of infection prevention, namely the Society for Infection Diseases, the Society of Microbiology, the Society of Laboratory Physicians, and the Society for Hygiene and Infection Prevention in Healthcare, my own association. These groups of experts from the field set up recommendations for the prevention of infection. The WIP is subsidized by the Ministry of Welfare and Health. These guidelines should be considered as optimum measures to be taken. They attempt to reach a balance between irritability and practicability. That's very important. Because of some greater MRSA outbreaks with an epidemic strain from abroad, the Inspectorate of Health sent out the first bulletin, How to Handle Patients Who Have Repatriated from Foreign Countries. And last but not least on this list, we have the National Working Party for Antibiotic Policy, the SWAP. Policies regarding the empirical use of antibiotics do matter in the control of antimicrobial resistance. Holland is therefore a member of EERS. It means European Resistance Surveillance System. 28 countries join in this network. They collect data from antimicrobial resistance to compare the results. Next slide, please. Staphylococcus aureus remains a common cause of infections in many countries. Since 1976, there has been a global increase of methicillin and multi-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. It is now one of the most important healthcare-acquired infections to be found in hospitals, but also in nursing homes throughout the world. The intensivity of Staph aureus to methicillin is caused by the presence of the MECA gene. The presence of this gene makes these strains insensitive to all beta-lactam antibiotics. There are also varying degrees of sensitivity to aminoglycosides and many other groups of antibiotics. Methicillin resistance can be confirmed in the laboratory by means of sensitivity testing, and the Dutch Society for Medical Microbiology has drawn up guidelines for this purpose to do it all in the same way. Next slide. As you can see, there are a lot of risk factors for the contamination and colonization of patients. Intensive care treatment, use of three or more antibiotics per patient and per period, pressure ulcers and abscesses, surgical wounds, nasogastric and endotracheal tubes, drains, urinary or intravenous catheterization. Next slide. And as you can imagine, it is very easy to colonize the vulnerable patient. However, there are a lot of opportunities for contact with nurse and or medical staff. If you can see in this picture, so many critical points to touch, so easy done, and so often forget to hand hygiene. And we all know that hand hygiene is hardly to control. Next. In 1961, MRSA was first detected in England, less than 1 year after the introduction of methicillin. The spread in Europe was not as fast as it would be now. In the Netherlands, we had our first problems with MRSA in 1986, so that it's much later as in the UK. And the National Institute of Public Health and the Environment, the RIVM in Holland, carries out surveillance on the prevention of MRSA in the Netherlands. To this end, one isolate from each patient or staff member found to have MRSA is sent to the RIVM. In special cases, it is possible to have several isolates from one patient typed in consultation with the RIVM. Next slide. Despite the euro, Europe is not yet equal. This slide shows the differences in Europe. These are the results of the EARS networking. 20 Dutch laboratories participate in this project. We are not the only one with a low MRSA prevalence. In Holland, the prevalence at present is now less than 1%. We are so successful until now because of the national search and destroy policy. We believe in keeping these guidelines has a great impact, because when MRSA becomes a part of the normal flora, then the antibiotics prophylaxis policy for preventing hospital-acquired infection must be adapted. Active surveillance has proved in many occasions to beat the MRSA. MRSA is just as virulent as methicillin-sensitive Staph aureus. Some MRSA strains spread more rapidly in hospitals than other strains, which can lead to hard-to-control epidemics. On the one hand, the fight against MRSA is focused on optimizing the detection of MRSA by specifically searching for it, while on the other hand, aiming to curtail the problem by implementing isolation measures when MRSA is found. Early identification of patients with MRSA is essential in order to be able to take measures as quickly as possible. Therefore, the infection prevention department must be informed in Holland as soon as possible in the event of suspected or proven MRSA. And the hospital infection control department can take measures immediately. Next slide, please. Search and destroy policy means prevention. It means in general that every patient and every healthcare worker coming directly from a foreign hospital must be screened for MRSA. This is because it has been found that patients hospitalized in foreign countries can be colonized with MRSA. The patient is kept in strict isolation until he or she is proven MRSA-free. We do not make any distinction between colonization and infection. Colonization occurs when microorganisms grow after contamination. An infection occurs when the host experiences a reaction with accompanying symptoms as the result of that colonization. Colonization of patients and staff members and the transfer of bacteria by the hands play an important role in the spread of Staph aureus. Therefore, the fight against MRSA should not be limited to people with infections. Next one, please. MRSA strains which have led to an outbreak are rare in the Netherlands. It is even news in my country. Reports in the national and local newspaper, but also reports on the 8 o'clock television in the evening news, it's hardly to believe. No single bacterium in Holland attracted more attention in the last decade than the MRSA. Next slide, please. Unknowingly colonized patients and healthcare workers who have worked in foreign countries are a risk for spreading and perhaps shedding MRSA. Therefore, the fight against MRSA should not be limited, as I said, only to people with infections. Rapid recognition is essential to take steps as early as possible, and therefore we ask active patients before admission and before outpatient consultation. We also use posters, be your eye catches to make patients and healthcare workers aware of the problem. On the poster on the left side, that is broadly distributed by the Dutch Association, the VHIG. And on the other one is broadly used in my own hospital, in outpatient clinics, first aid departments, ambulance, and even in the GP's waiting room. MRSA control is hard work. The ICP and the microbiologist spend a lot of time in Holland to prevent MRSA, and they spend even more time controlling an MRSA outbreak. You definitely need a full-time infection control practitioner. I work 36 hours a week, that's a full-time job in Holland, and I spend about 30% of my time on MRSA alone. This includes surveillance, teaching, updating the guidelines, and answering ad hoc questions from worried healthcare workers, patients, or families. Next slide, please. When a patient is admitted from a Dutch hospital or nursing home where MRSA is present, or when a patient is repatriated from a foreign hospital and he or she has had surgery, has drains or catheters, was or still is intubated, has been hospitalized more than 24 hours, has open wounds, has possible sources of infection like abscesses or other open wounds, is a confirmed carrier of MRSA, then the MRSA protocol starts immediately. Everybody in the hospital must know what to do and how to handle. You can find the risk categories, how we use them in Holland, on the website from the Working Party WIP. It's not on the slides, but I will tell you. It is www.wip.nl. Don't be afraid, you cannot read it. It is not only in Dutch, but it is also in English. I already told it, we want to spread the message. The next slide, please. Despite the national guidelines, we still have local differences in compliance. In 1999, Dr. Andreas Frost from Nijmegen University Hospital and myself, we did a survey among all the infection control practitioners in the Netherlands. We had a great success and a great response. 74% returned the questionnaires, but we find a lot of differences. Too much to tell you all about it. Here are some results, as you see. The time frame between discharge from a foreign healthcare institution and admission to a Dutch hospital, which is used in the decision to admit staff and patients, varies from 1 month to 12 months. In my own setting, we have 6 months. Most centers took multiple screening sets with a time span in between cultures ranging from less than 1 hour to more than 24 hours. The reason for the differences is not always evidence-based, but because of practical experiences in emergencies. Local policy can be different if the reasons are valid, but it remains a problem for patients and healthcare workers who visit or work in different settings. Some people cannot understand the difference. This year, the WIP, the Working Party of Infection Control, the WIP came out with a new guideline about MRSA to solve a lot of these problems and reach consensus throughout the microbiologists and infection control nurses in my own country. That makes it hopefully easier to understand for patients who visit different healthcare settings, and hopefully it is easier to understand for the staff. Next slide, please. Search and destroy strategy is based on more factors. First, we keep the patient in strict isolation, based on the CDC guideline and written in our own hospital guidelines based on the WIP criteria. The visits of suspected or positive patients to the outpatient clinic must be planned at the end of the day, so effective measures can be taken and the risk for other patients is minimal. Cleaning and disinfectant procedures play a very important role. So does the screening of patients and healthcare workers. Smears from nares, throat, perineum, wounds, skin lesions, and urine must be taken as soon as possible. Smears for screening should be preferably collected before outpatient consultation, or even better, at a GP's practice. And that's why we put the posters in the GP's waiting room. If potential MRSA candidates returning from abroad go for a visit to the general practitioner, they should tell the doctor. And then measures can be taken to sample before going to the hospitals and clinics. We always make a list of contacts. And if a patient is found positive, we screen all these contacts, and this means healthcare workers, all of them, and all patients. Next slide, please. Without teamwork and without facilities, the search and destroy policy is not possible. Like a football match, you can only win with skilled and experienced nursing and medical staff, hospital administrations and management who follow the advice from microbiologists and ICPs. What a nice wish. And of course, communication and cooperation with all the external bodies. All players must have the same goal, prevention of MRSA spreading. Next slide, please. This procedure is mainly followed when MRSA is detected. We store the isolates and send it to the REVM. In a new patient, we store the isolate and type it. And immediately, the infection control practitioner warns everybody concerned. And if you find somebody, you go to the right side of this picture. If he is positive, we put him in contact isolation, and we start with decontamination. And we make a contact of all the extended screening of all the patients and healthcare workers. And here again, we go on. Positive, we start again with decontamination, and negative, we screen. Still, three culture sets with some weeks in between are negative. But you can that also find in the guideline from the Netherlands. Next slide, please. Healthcare workers with eczema and skin wounds must not come into contact with MRSA patients or suspected MRSA patients. The team around the colonized and infection patient should be as small as possible. They are all screened weekly without exception. Some doctors try to neglect the call for screening, but we call them and they have to come. If a healthcare worker is found positive, he or she is sent home with sick leave. And on the day the staff member is found positive, culture samples should be taken from the throat, nose, and any skin defects. Carrier treatment should be initiated on the same day, consisting of skin and hair disinfection and treatment of the nose or skin. Control culture should be taken on the 10th, the 15th, and the 20th days. And the staff member may not resume working until all three sets of control cultures are negative. It remains a big problem for patient and healthcare worker if they become a permanent carrier. Whenever the patient comes to visit the hospital, all the measures should be taken again. And that is a big burden for the patient, but also for the family. A healthcare worker who remains a carrier is not allowed to have patient contact anymore, because he or she can spread the MRSA easily to other patients. And we have to look for other work for these persons. Next slide, please. We decolonize patients and healthcare workers which are colonized or infected. We use mupirocin in lower nares and or perineum. That depends on the place where the MRSA has been found. During the decolonization, there is a daily showering or bath with betadine or chlorhexidine. The choice depends on the consulting medical microbiologist or the consulting pharmacist. I think personally they are equal. It is important to explain the duration of time the disinfectant must stay on the body and hair before washing it away. Otherwise, they go to the shower and wash it immediately away and it doesn't work. We advise the daily changing of outer clothing and underwear to prevent recontamination. And since we know that a healthcare worker was recontaminated through her own bed quilt and cushion, we recommend steaming all these bed items. The extra costs are paid by my hospital. Eradication with vancomycin or linezolid is only given in consultation with the medical microbiologist. Next one, please. The decolonization is not always successful. And the reason for this varies, and it is not always known why. But some patients or healthcare workers are not capable to follow the right instructions, or they are permanent carriers, or it could be the wrong treatment or the wrong duration. But we always try the very best to treat them till they remain negative. We hope we can get them negative. Next one, please. Despite our MRSA guideline is generally accepted in the Netherlands and my own hospital, we are not completely without some trouble, believe me. Working with professionals like doctors and nurses always causes discussion. And the list of this's, ins and uns, I don't know if it is real proper English, but they are from my own practical experience. And you see, from the lifetime, disbelief, foolishness, fear if they found positive and become a carrier. The Oestrich policy, what we don't see, we don't know. It is sometimes unnoticed, unskilled staff, and so on and so on. Most of the time, it is because of ignorance, and sometimes also because of lack of knowledge. It keeps me busy, but if I'm lucky enough to convince them, I can tell you that is very satisfying. Next slide, please. A lot of Dutch microbiologists and infection control practitioners are pleading for using the Dutch guidelines. They are spreading the message around the globe by lecturers, publications, and the sharing of their experience. Personally, I prefer one of the slides from Dr. Andreas Voss. MRSA control and firefighting. Just do it, or just let it burn. Next slide. Because everything else costs money. It might add to the fire, and you still get hurt. Isn't that a nice one? Next slide, please. What do we do if we have an epidemic strain? When more people are colonized or infected with MRSA, we set up an outbreak team. This team consists of the medical microbiologist, an infection control practitioner, one member of the board of directors, the manager and staff nurse concerned, and don't forget the treating medical doctor. The policy team is responsible for the following: reporting to the board of directors and the healthcare inspectorate, communication inside and outside the team's own organization, good reporting of the epidemic, clearly identifying responsibilities, and that's an important one, making arrangements concerning whether or not to close the department where a patient was found to have MRSA. All the patients are put in strict isolation. Cohort nursing is possible. It is very important to do an information campaign for staff, other patients, family, neighboring hospitals and nursing homes, and the community. Open communication is essential to prevent rumors and suspicion. What's going on in your institution? If necessary, we close a room or even a ward for the time needed for the total clearance. And, as I said already, weekly we screen all the contacts. As I mentioned before, decolonization and eradication for colonized and affected persons, and don't forget, thorough cleaning and disinfecting. We flag the records of the MRSA positive patient. As soon as somebody is looking for this patient in the hospital computer, a message appears, but without breaching the privacy rights of the patient. When the patient comes for a next visit or admission to the hospital, we won't miss him. And the protocol starts again. I must admit, it is sometimes hard for the patient, but nearly everybody understands the reason why. Next slide, please. Because of all the cultures during an outbreak, it is not only overtime for me and my control team, but also for the lab. We are using the standard methods and not yet the rapidly fast techniques. The reason for that is simple. Money. Next slide, please. Strict isolation in a single room or as a cohort is one of the procedures. It is not possible without written protocols. Non-sterile gloves are worn when there is direct patient or environmental contact. A disposable gown with long sleeves must be worn, and also mask and caps. Not because MRSA is airborne spread, but just to prevent contamination and colonization. It's so easy to touch your hair and nose because we constantly touch ourselves. Linen and waste must be put directly into disposable containers or bags. Isolation manners cannot be discontinued until it can be reasonably assumed that a patient is negative. This is possible when the control cultures at least 3 times with 7 days intervals remain negative and when none of the risk factors below are present. And the risk factors are the use of antibiotics, skin defects such as wounds, eczema or psoriasis, greens, catheters, intravascular lines. Next one, please. The keen listeners must have noticed that I did not mention hand hygiene in the previous slide. Hand washing, and even more important, hand disinfection, is the measure for preventing transmission. Contamination of sites touched by hands is also a dangerous source for MRSA. It is essential to have a hospital-wide program with the use of alcohol hand wrap. Therefore, you need optimal facilities on the ward, but also in the outpatient clinic. And it is very important, in my opinion, that the medical and nursing staff serves as a model in practicing hand hygiene. Hand hygiene, remember, is the single, cheapest, but most effective weapon in the fight against infection control. Next one. Many previous studies have evaluated MRSA contamination of various items such as computers, television sets, stethoscopes, tourniquets, uniforms, mattresses, chairs, bed frames, and so on, and so on. Remember, dust serves as a reservoir for microbes, so also for MRSA. MRSA can survive for more than 6 months in dust. That's why cleaning is so important in breaking the chain of transmission. In my own hospital, we have a special MRSA clean team. Special trained cleaning staff who can be called 7 days a week. And even then, the people from the infection control department check afterwards if everything is properly done. It's so easy to forget some spots to clean, and then you have the danger with some dust with maybe some MRSA. Therefore, we use a checklist and it must be filled in and signed by the special trained staff. A complex and expensive procedure, yes, I must admit. But closing a room or closing an operating theater too long after discharge of the MRSA positive patient, that's much more expensive. Next slide, please. An increase of MRSA can be expected. Since there is in the Netherlands a European policy exists, and even now worldwide, to allow free choice of healthcare wherever, the cross-border movement of patients and healthcare workers can jeopardize our success of our search and destroy program. And that's why it's so important we have to ask the patient, have you had an operation or something in abroad, in whatever country? Next one. Some are asking us, why do you fight MRSA? In the end, you will lose the battle. Well, MRSA will never be solved by the introduction of new antibiotics. a policy such as we used costs 10 times less than the cost caused by serious MRSA infections. And it was and it is told many times, also in the previous daily classes from the last week. Increase of MRSA means a longer hospital stay, more costs, life-threatening infections, high mortality. It means also the available antibiotics for prophylaxis and treatment can no longer be used. And what then? And higher use of vancomycin led definitely to increase of VRE. Next one. The success factors in our policy are, first of all, belief. Awareness of the problem by all healthcare workers. Interdisciplinary teamwork, permanent education, infection control teams, and a very important one, control of the regular cleaning and disinfecting policy, and extinguish control during an outbreak. Do we have no problems at all? Well, since 1998, we have a changing epidemiological pattern. Here's a slight increase in the MRSA prevalence within Dutch sources, instead of strains alone from foreign countries. And nobody knows yet where it could lead. But if we keep the strategy as part of the quality program in hospitals, we can hopefully suppress it. Till now, the Dutch approach has proven to be successful. And a lot of professionals and institutions around the world are looking for the way we are doing it. And the first attempts are made to follow. Holland, a small country, famous for its beautiful tulips, windmills, wooden shoes and cheese, but also famous for more than 15 years for the low prevalence of MRSA. And I can tell you, I am proud to play a role as an infection control nurse in this successful battle against the MRSA. And this was my lecture. I thank you for your attention, and please do not hesitate if you have any questions. I will hear it from our host, Paul Weber. Thank you.
Well, Gertie, thank you very much. Would you give us that website again, www.
Yes, again, www. Then WIP.NL.
Good. Gertie, thank you for an excellent presentation and for staying at work late into the evening to give this teleclass. Before I open the floor for questions, Gertie, do you want to say a word about the IFIC conference that's coming up in October in Croatia?
Oh, that will be great. First, I will explain shortly what the IFIC is. The IFIC is a federation, and it hosts as an umbrella organization for now nearly 50 professional organizations in infection control throughout the world. The APIC is a member, my Dutch association is a member, Shika is a member, the ICNA is a member, these are the biggest, the EPSIC is a member. So all around the world we have now 50 countries who are involved, and the main item of IFIC is share ideas, share the relevant practices, share evidence-based practices, and one of the most important things, not every country has as much money as we have. We have low-income countries, and they cannot afford all the expensive magazines and journals. They cannot afford to go to high-level symposia. Therefore, we try to build a bridge, like lectures like this, and we had a book with basic concepts, what people can use. And now in October, we set up our fifth conference in Croatia, Poric. 11 Southeast European countries are involved in organizing this conference. Like all the other IFIC conferences we had in South Africa, in Malta, in UK, they were all set up with a lot of time to talk for people with each other, to know each other, to share ideas, and to give workshops. But even all the excellent speakers of the world are willing to come and share the ideas with you. We try to keep the fee as low as possible. also the fee for the hotels, so it would be able for many people to come to this symposium.
Could you tell me why you have used negative air pressure rooms? Are you saying it's airborne?
Because it is easily spread by dust, and if you don't have a negative pressure room, it's very easy for the dust. When you open one door or make some movements, all the dust can go onto the corridor and can easily spread throughout the hospital. That's why we say we put the patient in a single isolation room, and whenever possible, we visit a sluice with negative pressure.
What's your success rate for the decolonization of your staff members?
In my own hospital, we have a 100% success rate, but I must admit we don't have many nurses. Since my career with MRSA, we had 10 nurses colonized after treating a patient. All these patients were heavily wounded, with big wounds, and were heavily colonized. Sorry, as we have a lot of wounds with heavily colonized. These nurses were all treated, and within 10 days they were negative, and they never. And we checked them to look if the MRSA is coming back for a year. That's only we do that in our hospital, but they remain negative. And that's what I hear from my other colleagues in Holland. It's not really exactly written somewhere, but it's more as 98% who remains negative after the treatment. And the 2% who are staying positive, they are sent to another doctor for consultation to check if they have wounds or hidden ulcers somewhere in the body or a bad tooth. Then it was sent to a dentist to look if there is a hidden source who keeps the MRSA. And if they remain positive, then I told they are not allowed to work anymore at patients.
And what about your patients? What's your success rate for decolonizing patients?
I know only 2 patients in my career who stayed positive. First one had a lot of abscesses into his internal body after a lot of operations. He came from Greek, and he didn't recover, and we couldn't get him negative, and he died from a septicemia. And the other patient had it for some years. It was a patient who had an accident when she was 16 years. She had an open wound on the underleg, in front of the underleg, and that wound opened twice a year. And when she was 40 years, she went to Belgium to look after her sister, who was in the hospital for several months. She cared for her, and then she was contaminated with the MRSA, and of course in the wound. And it remained for some years, and then but it's not a professional thing what I'm now telling, but I start laughing when I do it. I advised her from Australia, I learned that tea tree oil can be very helpful in the fight against MRSA. And I advised this person, and the doctor said that was okay, I must say that too. I could say that to her, but not as an infection control nurse, because I don't have proven signs of that, but I just said it as Gertie. Well, I learned from people from Australia and used the tea tree oil, and it's like a miracle. In 1 month, she remains negative, and she's still after some years negative. So it's not a proven scientific part, but it helps. And that's my only own experience. And the rest, when I heard from my colleagues, we often contact each other, it's nearly the same.
It's Claire Berry from Sunnybrook and Women's. I just want to congratulate you on your marvelous control and your success stories in Holland, and we're all envious. You really have, as a country, taken on this in a wonderful way. And we thank you and hope we can follow what you've done.
Thank you very much for the nice words.
Gertie, thank you again for such a great presentation and for being such a good sport about staying up so late. And thanks to everyone for joining us today. Hopefully we'll get a chance to talk again very soon. Goodbye.